Welcome to Allocation Disorder. I am Sam Staskel, joined as always by Paul Tenorio, and we are coming to you from Austin, Texas, where the U.S. men's national team just beat Jamaica 2-0 in a pretty solid overall performance at Q2 Stadium. U.S. now in first in the Ocho, in the CONCACAF Octagonal, with 8 points through four games. We are going to break this down in depth for you. But first, Paul, I wanted to give a very special shout out to Meg Lenahan and Steph Yang and everybody else at The Athletic who has done such amazing work on their coverage of this entire NWSL scandal and fallout from the Paul Riley disturbing, basically, findings that were told to Meg. I don't know if the timing was wrong last week or whatever it was, but we did not shout it out on last week's show, and we were remiss to not do so. So shout out to Meg. She's a star. If you somehow are listening to this show and don't know what I'm talking about, go to The Athletic, read that story. It's important. It's really good journalism, and it's continuing to have massive ramifications in NWSL, and hopefully will lead to a better world and a better league for the women's players in our country. So before we dove into USMNT stuff, I just wanted to give that a shout out. Paul, I know you feel the same way that I do about that story, so I'll spare you. It is late. It's 1:30 a.m. here in Austin, so we'll just dive right into it. 2-0 win. Like I said, pretty solid overall performance. We can just do a quick little breakdown. Paul, you want to take us through the starting 11 and kind of some of the chronology of some of the key events in the game?
Wow. Yeah, I'm honored. I'm honored to do so.
You hadn't spoken yet, so I've been talking for a while. I'm like, I need to get this man involved. I got to pass him the ball.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you granting me this opportunity. Yeah, you know what? The starting lineup was actually had a few surprises, I felt like, in the starting lineup, just based on who had been available for training and some of the guys that we were expecting to see, Chris Richards being one of them. So the starting lineup, Matt Turner in goal, Serginho Dest, Walker Zimmerman, Miles Robinson, Anthony Robinson from right to left, Tyler Adams, Yunus Musa, Weston McKennie in midfield, and then Paul Arriola, Ricardo Pepi, and Brendan Aaronson on the forward line. Yunus Musa starting, despite a COVID scare, an inconclusive test that held him out of training on Wednesday. Greg Berhalter and his staff did not get back the results of that PCR test until 6:46 p.m. yesterday, exactly 24 hours before kickoff.
23 hours and 59 minutes.
23 hours, 59 minutes. Not sure how many seconds had passed in that 6:46 time slot. Unfortunately, that time stamp on his iPhone was only down to the minute, but credit to Greg Berhalter for giving us the to-the-minute update on when he got that text. And Yunus Musa was very good in this game, so it was a good thing that he was out there. I thought Walker Zimmerman had a strong performance. But for me, Sam, before we start going into details, I'll just say from kind of a 35,000-foot view. Is that the right way to put it? I don't know.
Yeah, you get it.
Aaronson, Pepi, Musa, Weah, Arriola, those are my guys in this game. Those are my guys.
And angry.
And I can't wait to actually have a little bit of a segment on Paul Arriola and his performance, because I know people are like,
yeah,
I'm in on the first four names. And then I threw Arriola in there with Sam and they're like, what? No.
The old curveball, the old Paul Arriola curveball. Let's talk about Pepi for a second, man. Because I, when you said 35,000 foot view, that's what I thought you were going to. I mean, the guy scored 2 goals. 18 years old, playing in his home state here in Texas. 2 months ago, Paul, this guy didn't even know if he was going to play for the U.S., if he was going to play for Mexico. And here we are. He has a huge second half in Honduras. Goal and 2 assists. Really just 1 assist. One of those assists was fake. But it counts in the stat sheet.
It was a fake assist.
It was a shot
that led to a goal. Let's call it
You can't
that.
Get an assist on a
call
shot.
It an assist. A shot that led to a
whatever.
Goal.
Anyway, he has a goal and 2 assists. And then tonight he comes out and he scores 2 goals. He's pretty quiet otherwise, but the kid knows how to finish. He has a knack for getting open the box. And when he does get open in the box and he gets that service, it's in. Like, he's playing with such confidence right now. He's got 13 goals in MLS, which I believe is tied for the all-time record for a teenager with Diego Fagundes from his Revs days. Kind of a weird one there. 3 goals in 2 games for the national team, his first two games. He's super calm. He's super composed. He no moment seems too big for him. This guy is destined for, I believe, a huge money move this winter. Paul, I'm not the type of guy to really get carried away by U.S. national team prospects. I think most listeners of this show know that. I am all in on Ricardo Pepi. I love this guy. And Berhalter said it after the game. He has that instinct. He has that goal scorer's instinct that's really like almost impossible to teach. And you see that every time he's suited up for the national team. You see it pretty often for Dallas. And that's really why I'm so high on him. Like, that's impossible to teach. And the U.S. is... I mean, has the U.S. ever really had that in a pure number nine?
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not going to go so far to say the U.S. hasn't had a number nine who with a nose for goal. I mean, Brian McBride scored a lot of goals.
Yeah, of course.
Jozy Altidore scored a lot of goals. And in fact, Ricardo Pepi, and Sam, I'm doing this just for you. I want you to know that I'm doing this just for you.
I appreciate that.
Ricardo Pepi has had an amazing start to his national team career. He has not yet matched the start that Eddie Johnson had to his national team career.
That's right.
Lest we forget.
Man.
Lest we forget.
Good old DJ.
Eddie Johnson had an incredible start to his national team career. I'm pulling up the stats right now because I want to make sure I nail it. But, you know, people underappreciate what Eddie was for the national team. On our national team draft, I caught a lot of crap.
I think it's fair to say that Pepe is doing it on a bigger stage than EJ did it on. I remember some of those games.
They were not
Hex games. They were not Ocho games.
He scored his first goal against El Salvador. Okay, in his first cap. Right. Then he scored a hat trick 4 days later against Panama. Then he scored the game-winning goal in the next game against Guatemala. He had seven goals in his first six World Cup qualifiers. I don't care.
Why are we talking about Eddie Johnson?
Because I'm just saying. I think I might have to call Eddie Johnson.
We have a whole match to analyze, and you're bringing up Eddie Johnson.
I'm just apologizing to our listeners. You apologize for not putting some love and respect on EJ's name. That's all I'm saying.
I will never apologize. I'll never back down. I'm excited about Ricardo Pepi.
Pepi's an incredible player. I think you're partly excited because of your Pepas for Pepi movement, which makes a lot of sense. I think it works. Yeah. We've got to figure out how to make it an official thing. Definitely that we need to help the DJ that's been playing these.
He's having a rough go.
But
Paul, let's stay a little bit focused here. We're all over the shop right now. Well, I'm gonna rein you in a little bit. First of all, for those of you who don't know, Pepas is a jam. It's a banger. Go listen to it. It's fantastic. Second of all, I think we're both excited about Pepi. I think everyone has a right to be excited about Pepi. Berhalter said he's excited about Pepi. They're riding the train, as he put it.
He said it. He's on the train.
He's on the train. But I want to get beyond him. And beyond that, because it's fair to be excited, there was a lot more that happened in this game that is worth talking about. And I think first and foremost is something that we highlighted before the match, and that's verticality, right? It was kind of the buzzword for the USMNT heading into this camp. Berhalter brought it up a few times. You asked him about it. I think we talked about it on the show last week, in fact. And he wanted the US wingers and strikers to play a little bit higher up the field, to run in behind, to really stretch the back line. And he wanted the midfielders to play a little bit more directly through the middle, play more vertically, get the ball, go forward, a little less side to side. We saw that tonight in a pretty serious and significant way. I thought it was really positive. I think the best moments for the U.S. throughout the game, even in the first half when there weren't so many clear-cut chances, were via that verticality. And I thought it was a really, really good thing for a team that, while it got 5 points in the September window, didn't play up to standard in any of those three matches. And tonight, I don't think you can really say that. They executed the plan well.
Yeah, I think if you want to just pull the first goal out and use that moment, I think it speaks to verticality perfectly. It's exactly what Greg Berhalter was talking about on multiple levels. Matt Turner gets the ball. Immediately starts, rolls it out to Serginho Dest, and Dest turns up the field and gets moving. And by the time he carries the ball all the way across to midfield, passes it to Yunus Musah about 10 yards past midfield, and Musah turns into space. And why is that space there? The space is there because Paul Arriola immediately turns when Musah receives the ball and starts making a run toward goal. And Jamaica's back line, their fullback,
he's occupying Kamar Lawrence. Kamar Lawrence can't pressure.
Kamar Lawrence turns with him. immediately turns away from the ball and starts to move with Areola. Pepe originally had started to check towards Musa. He spins out and he starts to turn vertically too. The center back stops in his tracks and starts to track back with Pepe. And Musa, recognizing the space is there,
acres of space,
drives forward on the ball at pace. And it's actually a recovering midfielder behind Musa that starts to apply pressure, and Musa plays the ball out wide to Serginho Dest, who's now in space. And Serginho plays a little chip of a cross. Ricardo Pepe has recycled that run into the box. And it's actually an incredible header. And the ball is a little bit behind Pepe, about 7 yards from goal, and he's able to reach his head back around and flick the ball to the far post. But, Sam, you tweeted this. It was, 100 yards of space that they covered. It was four passes.
101.
101 yards, four passes. Constant, just pure verticality.
16 seconds. Yeah.
From Paul Areola, from Ricardo Pepe, that led to that goal. And that is some of what the U.S. wanted to do. It's just one example of verticality. There are other places where you needed the verticality, even playing against the low block that Jamaica played for some parts of the first half, especially.
Yeah.
But that is a great example of what Greg Berhalter was looking for from this team.
Absolutely. So let's wind it back a little bit and we can go through the game. It started really positively for the U.S., like literally from the first whistle. You know, there was a turnover in midfield or a loose ball in midfield, and Musa picked it up in the U.S. half, immediately found Pepe around midfield. Pepe had a little bit of a layoff to Aaronson. Aaronson played a one-time ball through to Areola, who's making a run behind the back line. Kamar Lawrence, former Red Bull, current Toronto FC, he dragged him down from behind, and Areola was in on goal, and I have no idea how that was not a red card. Jamaica should have been down to 10 within the first minute of the match, and Kamar Lawrence was very lucky that he was not sent off.
18 seconds.
Was it 18 seconds?
It was 18 seconds. Even Aaronson, Brendan Aaronson, in his post-game press conference was like, it was really early into the game, so I don't know if you can give a red card. If it's a red card, it's
a
red card.
You can, Brendan. Yeah. He's young. We'll give him a pass. So that happened right off the bat. I think in the fifth minute, there was a play where Anthony Robinson and Aaronson combined down the left in a positive way. That sort of continued throughout the first half. There was a play in the 18th minute. I think Robinson was played in position for a really good cross. It wasn't a very good ball that he hit. It was behind Areola. 30th minute, McKennie and Aaronson had a nice little combo play after McKennie won a second ball on the left-hand side. 33rd minute, easily could have been another red card. Aaronson strips Damian Lowe, Jamaica center back, right near midfield. I don't know who he played it to. But he played it to a teammate. Teammate played him through. He gets in behind. Lowe actually makes an incredible tackle, in my opinion. I don't think it was a foul.
As it happens, you turned to me and said, incredible tackle. That's what you said. And then the whistle blew, and we were like, whoa, he just called that. And it looked like at first that he was calling a penalty. It was
on the literal edge
box of
the penalty area. And, no VAR in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying because CONCACAF, and Lowe was the last man. And so I don't think it was a foul, but if you call the foul, it has to be a red card. Denial of a clear goal scoring opportunity.
The moment you call it a foul, it is a red card.
Exactly. Again, he gets off with a yellow, and that was kind of it for the first half. Jamaica actually had the better looks towards the end of the first half. There was one play, I can't remember who it was, guy cut in from the right-hand side on his left foot and forced Turner into a diving save.
Jamal Lowe. Jamal Lowe with a low curling shot. Yeah.
And then Shamar Nicholson, the striker, had a really good flicked header off of a corner kick. And very easily could have snuck in at the back post, very easily could have hit a teammate, but no one was able to run onto it for an easy finish on the doorstep. And you go into halftime, and it's 0-0. And Paul, I was a little bit more pessimistic than you were at the break. We were sitting up there. We're the vantage point at Q2 Stadium, which, by the way, really cool venue. I enjoyed it. I thought it got properly loud in there. The DJ was bad and stupid, and well, I wish
we'll
U.S. Soccer would change this production.
Yeah, we'll come back to that later. But, we had great outdoor press box, outdoor auxiliary press box by choice. And
we had the all-22.
We had a great vantage point of the all-22. We were able to see movement, shape, defensive movement especially, pressing really, really clearly, really, really well. And so, Sam, you and I had a conversation at halftime because For a good chunk of maybe, I want to say 15 to 20 minutes, Jamaica had dropped, you know, starting about 15, 20 minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
They dropped into that low block and said, basically, try to break us down the way Canada did.
Looked a lot like Canada.
And you felt like it was looking a lot like Canada. I think the stats kind of showed that it was looking a lot like Canada. U.S. wasn't really able to generate a ton of touches in the box. They weren't really able to create anything, any sort of clear-cut chances. I felt it didn't look as much like Canada because I thought the U.S. was actually doing a better job of creating shorter passes and combinations around the defensive players to try to pull them out of space. It led to a couple little looks, and I just felt like there was more confidence. There was more they were creating more dangerous opportunities. They weren't getting through to the very end, right? There was this moment where Weston McKennie combined on the left side of the box, and he actually,
earned a corner. Yeah,
with Aronson in the 30th minute, like you said, earned the corner. Like there were these little combinations and moments. There was another combination between Dest and Ariola and Aronson, and Aronson ended up trying the left-footed curler and just didn't get his foot around it. You know, they were doing things like that that they weren't doing at all against Canada.
No, you're absolutely right.
And so I was feeling a little bit more like, hey, you know, they're doing some good things here. They're doing some good things. They're going to break through. And they did. They were pretty much very quickly. It wasn't a breakthrough against the low block, to be fair.
No, but it was. And Jamaica did not, and they said this, the head coach Tapa Whitmore and center back Adrian Mariapa, they both said this in the post-game press conference. They lost their discipline in the second half from a tactical standpoint. And that killed them. But part of that, I think, Paul, is what Berhalter has been talking about since the Gold Cup and maybe even before. The U.S. is really good at wearing teams down, like really, really good. You know, maybe not in the 49th minute. That's not an excuse for Jamaica. But the last 10, 15 minutes of that game, Jamaica was exhausted, like completely dead. They had nothing. And the U.S. very easily could have made this 3-4, even 5-0. On a few occasions through Giassi Zardes in particular. And I think that played a role in Jamaica losing their tactical discipline. And we saw it. We walked through the first goal already, right? It's kind of a key example. And that really turned things for the U.S. You could see the confidence.
Immediately, you could see the confidence. Musa was driving at people more. Yeah. Dest was being going at
people. Dest maybe got a little too confident.
Weston McKennie was just starting to dribble at guys after that. Brendan Aronson was trying more
Aronson
shots from
was
distance.
Fantastic,
he was really good.
So good.
I thought, you know, for me, man, from where we were, the angle we were at, I would say I'm interested to go home to Chicago to watch the game on the broadcast. So I can't say this with 100% certainty because I haven't seen the broadcast, but I can tell you that from our vantage point, my appreciation for what Paul Ariola does is like significantly higher than I think most people's attitude toward him on Twitter. He was incredible. He was so relentless in his running, defensive running, attacking running. He did not stop pressing, pushing. I mean, the poor back line, that was like the oldest back line in CONCACAF history for Jamaica tonight. And he was just absolutely destroying them. And so was Aronson.
But Kamar Lawrence and Elvis Powell are pretty damn good athletes.
Yeah, he was just nonstop. There were multiple times where his pressing pushed the ball over to Aronson's side to allow Aronson to then make the turnover and create an opportunity out of it. That started from how far and how much Ariola was running and how hard he was going. And there was this great moment in the second half in the 67th minute where Ariola is running to create a turnover, chases, wins the ball, and basically crosses the field, gets it to Aronson, and Aronson gives it back to him because he had just covered like 70 yards of space from right to left, and his shot was blocked for a corner kick, and he kind of laid on the grass and smiled and laughed because it was just like incredible at that point in the game how hard he had been working, and it was 2-0 at that point in time for him to push the way he had pushed just then. I just think like people underrate him because
he was a horse.
He is not great in the final third. He has some touches that aren't clean.
And he was not He was not in this game.
Yeah, this first half, there were some moments that were just really just kind of typical Paul Ariola. But, like, I just feel like with what he provided on that wing, like, it's no surprise to me that I thought Tim Weah was really, really good when he came in. But he came in and took advantage of a back line that was exhausted because they had to deal with Brendan Aaronson and Paul Ariola for 68 minutes by the time he came in.
No, everything we talked about with verticality, right, all those moves, Aaronson and Ariola were either both or one were in all of them, every single one. And even in the ones they weren't in, right, if it was on the opposite side and one of them was in it and one of them wasn't, the other one was high. And they were occupying their defender, and they were testing them, and they were making them sprint back. And they were really, really good tactically all night. They were very smart with how they played. They were obviously relentless with how they moved. Their defensive pressure was fantastic. Ariola almost scored a goal off blocking a kick from Andre Blake. You know? I'm going to read the quote that Berhalter had after the match about these guys. When you think about Paul and Brendan, I would hate to play against those guys. They're relentless. They don't stop. It's annoying. I think I turned to you at one point, Paul, during the game, and I think I said, I would hate playing against these guys. It would be a nightmare because they're constantly running, constantly. It's annoying. I mean, as a coach watching them, I'm like, oh my God, you guys are not stopping. You keep going. And they harass those defenders the whole time. It was really an incredible performance from the two of them. Now, these guys are going to be dead. I don't think we're going to see either of them, certainly in the, from the start on Sunday. Paul, I mean,
there was a little moment that I'm going to write about tomorrow where Brendan Aaronson was walking into the room for the press conference after the game, and he kind of stumbled. He tripped over something, and U.S. men's national team press officer Michael Cameron turned to him and kind of like chuckled and was like, "Are you okay?" And Brendan was like, "Yeah, my legs are just jelly." Like he was cooked completely, even still in the press conference room. His legs were wobbly because of how much running he had done. And
he came
off. He came off in the 68th minute. Greg Berhalter talked about how when they were preparing for these games, before camp started, they put the minutes up, just like Sam did, you did, in an Excel sheet for us at The Athletic, of the number of minutes that these guys have played over the last 2 weeks or week or so. And Brendan Aaronson was going 90, 90, 90 in the league, in Champions League.
Yeah, he was playing midweek games,
and,
too.
And Berhalter actually said we didn't think he'd be able to go for us in the first game because of how many minutes he had played, and then he's flying all the way from Salzburg, and he did. And he did what he did. And Paul Ariola was playing a lot of minutes for DC United as well and did what he did. I will say now, again, it was an incredible performance. I don't think either of them can start in Panama. I don't think there's any way.
I mean, certainly not Ariola, who went full 90. I mean, I was turning to you after they went up 2-0, and I was like, get both of those guys off. Like, they're dead. And Ariola kept going, to his credit. He never slowed. But yeah, I think the plan is got to be, certainly for Tim Weah, who we haven't really talked about, but he was excellent in this game.
He was very good.
Showed a lot of quality.
Very good.
Again, he had the advantage of being fresh against an exhausted backline. That always helps. But he looked really good. Probably should have had an assist on his artist play. We need to go back and look at the replay of this thing.
He put a little bit of ping on that ball, but I would have thought
mustard,
it was a goal.
A lot of mustard on that one. But he did really well to create space for himself. He had some dangerous moments that he created. He rounded a couple of guys. He showed some speed. It's like he plays for the French champions, you know? So he's a good player. Who knew? It was good to see him in a competitive match.
He could have had a couple assists. He had two moments. He also played the ball to Zardes when Zardes megged Andre Blake, but Blake was able to turn and keep it from going on the line. Those were both giving the ball to Zardes. So he was very, very effective. I think he definitely starts. I would say he'll start. Well, it doesn't really matter who he starts for. I don't think you can start either Aaronson or Ariola.
No.
I just don't think it happens.
It'll be Hoppy or Roldan.
Hoppy or Roldan with Weah out there. Yeah. But I just really, really, really impressive performances from both of those wingers tonight.
For sure.
All three of those wingers, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, let's take a quick break here, and then we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about this game, and we'll look a little bit ahead to Sunday in Panama as well. Stay with us.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach. but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS. Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public, the other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode. This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs, who would like to remind you when you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. You don't want to end up with Ryan, Graham, and Joe. Just kidding. Just kidding. Very much just kidding. Because I was very fortunate to have the three of them all join the show. And I had existing relationships with all three of them that allowed me to know that they could handle the amount of work that would be required, that they could be diligent in their tasks and be very effective on mic. And all three of them are. But again, that's because you have the existing relationship. If you don't feel like you have that with potential hires, then LinkedIn is going to make it very, very easy, and they're going to make it feel like you're connected to that person. They have a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire because it gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. But when you are setting the requirements and making it very specific as to what you're looking for, you can very quickly narrow it down to find the right candidate for that position. Hiring is easy when you have that many candidates, so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. And LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring, and you can too. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/TSS. That's linkedin.com/TSS to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. Thank you very much to LinkedIn for sponsoring today's episode.
And we are back. Allocation disorder post-game, USMNT 2-0 Jamaica. U.S. now in first place in the Ocho after Canada. Shout out to Canada, by the way, drawing 1-1 at the Azteca. Paul, correct me if I'm wrong here. You were the one that tweeted this out, I think. First team ever to get a result at the U.S. and Mexico in the same World Cup qualifying cycle?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's incredible. And you know, I
Canada is making the World Cup. They're making the World Cup.
I'm pretty sure going back to like the 30s, Mexico, something like 63-8-2 in qualifiers at the Azteca, including tonight. So it just goes to show that only 10 teams ever have gone to the Azteca and gotten a result in World Cup qualifying history. And this team tonight was one of those 10 teams. So a big result for Canada.
We're not here to talk about that, though. We are here to talk about the U.S. men's national team. We've obviously talked a lot about some of the players up at the top of the formation, right? Pepe, Aronson, Areola, Tim Weah, Yunus Musa, deservedly so. Let's shift our focus a little bit more to the back. Matt Turner didn't really have much to do tonight. He made one save that was solid. I think there was one play that he held across well, but pretty standard, not a lot of activity. I thought his distribution was mostly fine. There was a moment or two when you're like, what are you doing, Matt? But I think for the most part it was good, and he was aggressive with his, particularly with throwing the ball out, and I thought he did a nice job there. But
I do get nervous and appreciate he really looks that ball into his foot every time it's played back to him. You know, you
gotta keep your eye on the
number
ball,
of mistakes
man.
Goalkeepers make where they let the ball slide under their foot. And Matt Turner is definitely focused on making sure that does not happen. He does not want to let that happen. So credit to Matt Turner for making sure that he does not become a goalkeeper on a highlight where the ball goes under his foot. But every time he stares that ball down into his foot, I get a little nervous.
I mean,
get a little nervous about
he's already had a not top 10 in his life. He's had the not top 10 moment on SportsCenter. Not for anything with the ball with the feet, but there was a moment when he was in college that he doesn't like reliving. It almost made him quit the sport. Kind of crazy. Anyway, so he didn't have a ton to do. Let's talk about the defenders. We'll start with the center backs, okay? Miles Robinson, Walker Zimmerman. We knew Robinson was going to start. We did not know who was going to start next to him. We predicted that it would be Chris Richards, but you and I were talking. We weren't going to be surprised by anyone next to him. It could have been Zimmerman. It could have been McKenzie. It ended up being Zimmerman. He was actually a late call-up to this camp. He only came in after Tim Ream had to pull out because of family reasons over in England where he is based. John Brooks pulled out a few days after, so the U.S. only has four center backs in this camp. Zimmerman stepped up. I thought he did a good job. The distribution from him and Robinson at times I think could have been a little bit sharper, but Zimmerman won just about every single ball in the air, which is why I think he started tonight.
Bingo.
Right, Jamaica has some big boys. Shamar Nicholson is a good player and kind of a tank. And this is maybe the one team in CONCACAF where the U.S. isn't going to have a big natural advantage on set pieces. In fact, maybe even they're at a disadvantage. So you had to be wary of that, and Zimmerman did a nice job there. He really relishes those big, powerful headers that he can step into. And as a fellow tall, I appreciate that from him. So I thought he did pretty well tonight. What do you think about that center back pairing?
Yeah, I mean, look, I would agree in the defensive side of things. Walker Zimmerman was really important tonight in the number of headers he won, his aggressiveness in going up to win those headers. I mean, there was one moment actually where Sergiño Dest, up to nothing late in the game, made like a crazy Sergiño Dest meandering run, dribbling the ball, and dribbled himself into trouble, tripped and fell, gave the ball away. And the counterattack went the other way, and Sergiño was like jogging his way back. He was exhausted. And because he didn't recover fast enough, there was a man on the far post wide open, and Zimmerman didn't realize it until the cross came in.
Such a good
header. And he started backpedaling and it was able to somehow win the header. Sam, you were shocked when it happened. Then Sergiño fell down and started grabbing his cap and got subbed out for Shaq Moore. I think as he was jogging back, I turned to you and I said, Shaq Moore, please. Like, I was like Berhalter calling for Shaq Moore from the corner because I saw that Serginho Dest had no interest in trying to recover, whether it was pure exhaustion or just actual cramps or what. Hey, I don't know. But
you know what? We've gone after Serginho on the show before. I don't think his performance tonight is worth going after. I thought he was engaged. I thought he was dangerous in the attack. He obviously had an assist. He helped with that verticality at times. And yeah, is he going to win every challenge defensively? No, that's not his bag. But he tried tonight, and that was more than he did.
For sure. There was a moment in the game, Sam, where I mentioned to you, I think you looked away for a second, but Serginho was, you saw the tackle Serginho made, and I said, he had just finished a 30-yard sprint to get back and recover and make that tackle. And you were like, yeah, man, when he is committed, he is really, really good. He is really, really good.
He can be. I mean, he plays for Barcelona for a reason. And he ain't a scrub.
And I think ultimately the goal of this U.S. team is to get him to be really good and to actually try to attack through his side more often than not. And early in this game, they were attacking a lot through the left side through Anthony Robinson. And that's not Anthony Robinson's strength. His strength is not to be the guy on the ball, carrying it forward, dribbling and combining and passing.
There were a few times when he got released behind the back line, which is more of his strength.
That is his strength, is for the ball to be building up somewhere else and for his off-the-ball movement, his pace, his ability to read space to be what he's doing. And then you find him in space and he either serves it one time or shoots. And in fact, you know, that was that moment that you mentioned earlier. He actually did that and had opening in space, and Paul Ariola was open and he missed the pass. But anyways, the goal should be to be running more of that through Serginho Dest. I thought he was very good tonight. I thought, you know, Walker Zimmerman was good in what he was asked to do. And I think you saw in the second half that Tyler Adams started to drop back in between the center backs more to help with that distribution issue. Who also really gain an appreciation for his ability, Tyler Adams, to read plays.
It's something else watching him in person, man.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. He just has such a good feel for where to be defensively to be disruptive, and it's really actually incredible to watch, like some of the things that he reads.
I think the mark of an amazing defender is when you can really affect a play without having to make a challenge. And Adams did that a lot tonight. Right, he was putting out fires that you might not even really notice that he's putting out the fire because he's not winning the ball. He's not making a challenge, but he's shutting something off, whether it's a passing lane, stopping a guy dribbling, and they make a turn away from him and out of a danger area, or just delaying even, you know, on a promising looking counterattack. And he was all over the place. He didn't have the most active or effective night on the ball. In terms of distribution, he did start the play that led to the second goal. He found Anthony Robinson on the left. Robinson then took one touch, boom, right to Aaronson, who slotted across for Pepe for a one-time finish. Another really incisive, fast, vertical move. But, you know, he wasn't super active in possession. And then I think the only guy we haven't really talked about is Weston McKennie. And I thought Berhalter put it well after the match when he was asked about him. He said he had a professional performance, and that's something I would agree with. You know, obviously this was a big spot for him coming off the suspension and all of the drama and emotion that was involved with that last window. Also coming off of a poor performance in his only game last window in El Salvador. So he had a lot to prove tonight. His home state too, in Texas. I'm sure that was meaningful for him. He came out with a little blonde streak in his hair. He didn't have that at training yesterday. So that was a recent development.
I haven't seen it up close. The consensus in you're not in it, but in the Athletic WhatsApp channel was that it looked a little bit better from a distance than it did up close. So I have to reserve my judgment till I see
it. I'm into it, man. Everyone knows bleaching your hair helps you run faster. That's just like a scientific fact.
I forgot. Sam is our resident flow expert for the Athletic Soccer.
That's right.
He's got some real flow going right now.
It's something. I don't know. It's like a homeless man's Brendan Aaronson haircut, basically.
That's actually not a bad shout. You actually have got a little bit of a Nutty Professor look going right now.
Well, right. Oh, wow, I do. I haven't even looked at myself in this Skype window. I look insane. Got some Einstein stuff going on. Anyway, what were we talking about? Weston McKennie? Yeah, so he had some good moments, I thought. I thought he was good defensively. Again, another guy that wasn't super influential on the ball, but he did have some good moments. And what was really encouraging for me is to see how engaged he was after, right? And that's a good response, right? It was a cool moment when Pepe came off and the crowd is chanting Pepe's name and giving him this big, nice ovation, well-deserved. And Weston is turning to the supporters section. It was right before a corner kick. And so they're all in the box down there. And he turns to the supporters section and he's trying to amp them up, right? Like even more. Like he's doing the you know, he's raising the roof, whatever. Raising the roof.
Yeah, waving his arms up, saying more noise.
There we go. That's what I was looking for. You all know the gesture. He was clapping for Pepe and for Aaronson, who came off together. And I thought that was like a really kind of nice moment. We saw him yesterday at training, you know, and he was same old Weston for sure. Like I remember, you know, they were just kind of out on the field congregating before they did their formal warm up, kicking the ball around, whatever. And Weston comes running over. DeAndre Yedlin's kind of in the corner stretching by himself, and Weston comes running over and just like playfully tackles him. And he's laughing.
Yeah, he like knocked him over. He like shoved him over, and then Yedlin pretended like he hurt his shoulder.
So that's what Weston brings to this group that no one else really does to that level. And sometimes, you know, he needs to rein it in. I think we saw that last window. Can't be doing that in every setting, but it is an important dynamic that gets added to any team setting. So it was good to see him back in a positive way. Although Berhalter noted it, you know, he wasn't at his best, but it was a professional, decent, solid performance, even when he wasn't completely firing on all cylinders. So I thought that was positive too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's only one thing. We've gone through the entire starting 11, Sam. So I just want to give you a chance to vent, to critique something that's really been bugging you about Nashville.
I was so mad about this.
Before you go into this, what we're going to talk about is the pregame atmosphere from U.S. Soccer. And I do want to add that you're not the only person that has this opinion. Kevin Baxter tweeted about it. I felt the same way. It is overwhelming. It is loud. It is something that messed up my ears for like an hour before the game. And Sam, I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, so this has nothing to do with the fans. I thought the fans were great tonight. And I thought they actually really elevate. They helped the U.S. elevate. I thought they made a difference. But before the game, U.S. soccer is doing this thing. This is like policy now. It happened in Nashville too. Same exact thing. They have an actual in-stadium hype man. They have a DJ. The DJ is playing like LMFAO and Pitbull. And, you know, some people will roll their eyes at those musicians. Not me. Okay? I love Pitbull. Like, non-ironically. I've been to a Pitbull concert. Naperville Rib Fest 2018. Incredible show.
Number of times I've heard about the Naperville Rib Fest in 2018. It's just incredible.
It's just, well, you know, if you saw Pitbull there, you would think it was incredible too, Paul. Anyway, I'm not trying to knock these musical acts, but when you play them at the length that U.S. soccer is playing them in the pregame production and at the volume that they're playing them at, you're not leaving any oxygen for the fans to create an atmosphere of their own. And that's what drives the game. That's what drives a home field advantage. And Austin was able to overcome it, right? Because that's how, and I say overcome intentionally. They overcame it, right? You have to bring extra. U.S. soccer is not facilitating a good environment here. They're not. They're facilitating a bad one. And that's what we saw in Nashville, in my opinion. And then, you know, you do these things where you have guys on the mic in the supporters section, and you're trying to lead the stadium in chants from the Jumbotron, and like, okay, I guess that's fine, but like, how hard is it to do a USA chant with a slow clap? I don't think people need to be instructed with that. It's three letters and a slow clap. People know how to do that. Like, have a little more faith in your fans. Give them the oxygen to create a real environment. These can be really hostile places for road teams to play if U.S. soccer allows that to happen. And this is sort of just like a weird little behind the scenes thing that, you know, it doesn't sound like that big of a deal. Like, okay, they're playing music loud, like whatever. But like, I thought it was a big deal in Nashville. And I think it could have been a big deal tonight if the crowd wasn't as good as it was. And I just don't know why U.S. soccer isn't putting itself in a better position to have the crowd help the team. It's a weird thing. I don't get it. And it's not enjoyable for anyone.
It's really not. And I think you put it the right way. You don't give them the oxygen to do it on their own. And that's when it's at its best. And you know, stuff like that USA chant with the claps and other chants that they did where they went to the Jumbotron to do it. Like, people pick up on that stuff. When you're in...
Yeah, it just feels fake. It doesn't feel real.
It happens. They recognize. And the funny thing is like, sometimes people don't realize, like there were things that were happening naturally, organically, that were getting drowned out by some of the stuff, because the people that were doing it didn't realize that there was a chant happening already that was not coming from the supporter section, that just, you know, just let these fans do their own thing. And especially, please, just turn down the volume on the DJ
for the first hour and a half
before the game. It's like actually like obnoxious. It was actually obnoxious.
It was bad. I'll go back to the game in El Salvador, which, Paul, sadly, you were not there. But they had a tinny, crappy-sounding PA. And they were playing music, but it wasn't that loud. And the fans were having a party in the stands. And the fans were carrying the atmosphere, and they were dancing along to the music. They were grooving with it. But, like, the fans drove that atmosphere. And everyone saw what it was before the game. That place was wild for that national anthem, right? And I'm not saying that Q2 Stadium is going to have the same sort of atmosphere as Estadio Cuscatlan. It's not. Not at this point. Yeah, right? But it could be better than what it was if it had a little more oxygen for the fans.
Yeah, but it does make... I mean, like, speaking of that, like, I think Greg Berhalter's been talking about, like, how important the anthem can be, how special that is for the players when the anthem is playing for their country. I think part of it is realizing how much of a lift El Salvador and Honduras get in their home stadium when the fans are singing the national anthem loudly. I think that's an acknowledgement from Greg Berhalter of recognizing that how much of a lift those teams get from that atmosphere. It is cool. It is special. I've been thinking a lot about what it'll feel like in March to be in the Costa Rican stadium when that anthem plays for me. Like, for you know, it's just you have to let those moments happen organically. That's what makes them special. That's what makes them different. That's what gives you the chills when it happens, you know? And there was this moment in the game where we mentioned it a couple times now where...
I don't think we mentioned it on the show. We talked about it off air.
Well, we mentioned on the show the run that Weston made where the little combination he got through and got blocked out for a corner. And at that point, there had been 5 to 10 minutes of Jamaica being in a low block and not really a ton happening. And when that moment happened, the fans got fired up because it was a nice little creative moment, a little, you know, quick combination play.
No, it was a really good moment.
And they all started cheering, like, loudly. Like, they felt and the energy in the whole place, in the players, in the fans, everyone picked up with that. Like, the crowd was lifting the national team to up their energy. And the same thing happened after the first goal. Like, obviously, the cheers after the goal were huge, and it was great. And the atmosphere stayed live. And it, like, Musa was going at people, and Des was going at people, and McKennie got in on the act at one point. Because the energy never dropped. Yeah. The buzz was going. Yeah. And you just have to let that happen. Before we go to a break, I know we're about to go to a break. Real quick, I just want to say, real quick, one request for Sam is when Pepe scores goals, play Pepas. That's all he's saying. Play Pepas. Pepas for Pepe.
Listen, you don't have to play it in the stadium. Just play it at home. You know, fire it up on your iPhone, on your smartphone. Put it on your computer. Just fire it up. You'll thank me later. All right? We'll take a quick break, and then we'll go to Panama. Pepe, Pepas, in Panama for a party. I'm sorry. And we are back for the final segment of Allocation Disorder. We're going to make this a quick one. We're looking ahead a little bit to Panama. On Sunday, USMNT is traveling down there on Friday. Paul and I will actually be on the charter flight this time around. That's something they offer to a few journalists. I think it's 4 this time for each flight. So we won the lottery this trip. So we get to be on the charter plane. Kind of a cool little peek behind the curtain for you guys on that. So traveling down tomorrow and playing on Sunday, Panama lost 1-0 at El Salvador earlier on Thursday. They are now in 4th place, tied with El Salvador Points, 5 points for Panama so far through four games, but they're ahead of El Salvador on goal differential. So they are in fourth. Paul, I'm just going to put it bluntly. This is not a strong Panama team. This is not the same Panama group that went to the World Cup in 2018. It's probably not even as good of a team as the one that almost went to the World Cup in 2014. That was sort of the golden generation of Panamanian football. This one has some of those same players, but they are older and not quite as good. And the younger generation hasn't really come through in a way to replace those guys. So this is not a strong team. There are points there for the taking, in my opinion. But as we sort of mentioned at the top of the show, there is going to be rotation for the U.S. So how do you see this one playing out from a lineup perspective for the USMNT on Sunday?
First of all, I want to say that that team that went to the World Cup in 2018 was not a good team.
It was the worst team at the World Cup.
And the U.S. smashed them in Orlando a year ago, almost exactly 4 years ago to the day, October 6th, I believe it was. And they smashed them 4-0 or 4-1 in Orlando.
Does that mean that the anniversary of Cuba is like tomorrow?
Coming up.
These are things we should know.
These are things that could have, might work in a narrative game story, says the person who's supposed to be thinking about narrative game stories. Anyways, no, look, I looked at this window as a really important window for the U.S. because it's two home games. And so you expect 3 points in home games. If you're the U.S., yeah, you have to expect 3 points in your home games. And then it's a very winnable road game, if there's such thing as a winnable road game in CONCACAF.
There is such thing. There is.
Because they won it. They won in Honduras 4-1. And you should expect, I don't want to say expect to win in Panama, but this is a winnable game.
You should expect a result.
You can talk about 9 points. This is the window where you could talk about 9 points. Mm-hmm. Last window 100%. Was not that. And so this becomes a really interesting game in Panama, because if you win this game and you go in to that game against a struggling Costa Rica side, they're going to be desperate. We'll get into that later down the road. But you could walk out of this thing with 9 points. You could walk out of this with 14 points through six games. Be in a fantastic position.
I mean, 14 points through six games, like, it would take a pretty big misstep at that point to miss out. I don't know. I still think this is shaping up in a way where it's U.S., Mexico, and Canada, and I don't think it's going to be that close.
Yeah,
I think those three are pretty clearly above the rest of the group.
When you look at the table, that's how it feels right now. I think so far, El Salvador and Honduras, to me, are the two.
El Salvador is feisty. They are.
And I think Honduras is better than the result that we saw in the U.S. I think that they are a team that is going to make life difficult.
They drew in Canada.
Yeah, yeah. They're a good team. I actually think Honduras is a pretty good team. But I agree with you. I think there are three clear teams that are the better teams in this region. But, it'll say a lot for the U.S. if they can come out of this with 9 points. And I think you're going down to Panama right now with a lot of confidence. My column, though, that will run tomorrow, yeah, the same day as this, as this podcast, is that, this is a young team, and the growth and the progress of this team is not going to be linear. There are going to be some lows, like we saw in the first two games in September. There are going to be some highs, like we saw in the second half against Honduras and tonight, against Jamaica. That's the product of how young this team is. I mean, 29 players have played for the U.S. in the first four games.
That's wild, man.
21 of them have made their World Cup qualifying debut.
It's also wild.
It's crazy. Yeah. And today that first goal was an 18-year-old to a 20-year-old to an 18-year-old to put that first goal in the back of the net, yeah, to give the U.S.
Well,
the lead.
Actually, it was 18-20, 18-20, 18, if you want to be technical about it.
Yeah, with just those three players. And Brennan Aaronson on the left wing is also 20. I mean, yeah, it's such a young team. We need.
Yeah, if you're 23, you're old on this team.
And my warning is you have to understand that there are going to be some pains and some learning on the go. And that's what Greg Berhalter talked about. I asked him, I pointed out 18, 20 to 18, and I said, what does it mean to you to see these young players stepping up in big moments?
He didn't bite.
And he, the funny thing is, before the game, he was all about, no one talks about how young this team is. After the game, he was like, oh, we better not get too far ahead of ourselves here, because if we start thinking that we won the World Cup or that we had qualified for the World Cup already, we're going to get our asses kicked in Panama. That's what he said. That was the quote. And he's right, because this is a really young team. And if you start to believe that one result will bleed into another, you're gonna get in trouble. And you don't need to be young for that to happen. It happened when they smashed Panama in Orlando and went down to Cuba and expected to just get a result there. And so, you know, that's kind of what this column is. All right, look, let's take the good, let's take the bad, but we have to find that equilibrium and understand that this is a young team that's building towards getting to the World Cup, but really in one way also building towards 2026. And, you know, let's enjoy it, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves with Pepe. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves with Aronson. It will happen.
No, Pepe's
will happen
the real
over
deal,
time.
Bro.
Yeah, but it will happen over time. Let's understand that we're going to see these ups and downs because of the youth. Because of the youth.
No, you're 100% right. And I think we saw that in the first window. I will say, I think this group has learned a lot. And I will say, Paul, and this isn't something that we have time for on this show, but maybe it's for a different show. Maybe in a week. I think there's something to the simplifying of the approach that comes with not having your star attackers who can do a lot of amazing things on the ball and off the ball in Christian Pulisic and Gio Reyna. Not saying the ceiling is higher with this current team, but I'm saying in some ways, a simpler, kind of more straightforward approach can be a little bit more effective. And I think that makes me very optimistic for this window.
Super interesting decisions Greg Berhalter has to make and will have to make, provided everyone's healthy. But, you know, you look at that midfield, look at the wingers, and you think, right now, I don't think you can bench Brendan Aaronson. You're definitely starting Christian Pulisic at Fizer. So if you've got Christian there, you've got Brendan there, you know, you're moving, if Gio's healthy, when Gio's healthy eventually, you're moving him inside. And now you've got to say, okay, are you going to start over Eunice? Are you going to start over Weston? That's the competition. There's now potentially a competition for two jobs between Eunice Musa, Gio Reyna, and Weston McKennie. I mean, this is the level of depth for this team. All very young players. I also want to say that that's assuming that everyone's healthy. That never happens.
Never happens. Never, ever happens. Well, it's good to have the talent in reserve for when guys are not healthy. Paul, speaking of in reserve, it's time for us to go to bed. I don't know if that segue made sense.
Yeah, I have no. What you're trying to say is we have nothing left in our reserve tanks, and so it is time for this to be.
Thank
over.
You. Yes. Yeah, that is what I meant. That's exactly what I meant. Anyway, thank you for listening to this episode of Allocation Disorder. Hopefully, it has been illuminating and entertaining. I know I had a good time, but I'm slightly biased. I'm Sam Stasical. He's Paul Tenorio. We'll be back Sunday night, Panama City. Enjoy the game. I hope you enjoyed the one tonight. Thanks for listening.